Welcome to Off the Chart with Medical Economics, a podcast featuring lively and informative conversations with healthcare experts, opinion leaders, and practicing physicians about the challenges facing doctors in medical practices today. I'm Jeff Bendix, Senior Editor of Medical Economics. Pharmacy benefit managers, or PBMs, play a unique role in the U.S. healthcare system. While that role is not well understood by the general public, or even by many physicians, PBMs are widely blamed for skyrocketing prescription drug costs. They also bear some responsibility for the prior authorization process, which most doctors regard as a needless administrative burden. So what exactly are PBMs, and how did they acquire so much power in our healthcare system? Medical Economics Editorial Director Chris Mazzolini spoke with Jonathan Levitt, founding partner of the healthcare law firm Friar Levitt, to get answers to these questions and more. Chris began by asking Levitt to describe PBMs and how they got started.
A pharmacy benefit manager started in the 70s as a really unnecessary part of the healthcare system. You have health insurance companies that had growing volumes of patients, and they needed to administer and process drug claims. They need to gather a national network of pharmacies, and they need to have data and software that could analyze drug reimbursement rates. The life sciences system between list prices and acquisition cost and net prices is all pretty complicated. And so these insurance companies really had to outsource to PBMs.
A lot of people don't even know what PBMs are. Some people who do know sort of have this picture of them as sort of like this useless middleman and just jacking up healthcare prices. Mm-hmm. How much of that is true and how much of that is exaggeration?
The term useless to apply to PBM would be an exaggeration, but calling them a middleman is actually accurate. And some of the evils that you mentioned in terms of being negative for the entire healthcare system is absolutely not an exaggeration whatsoever. In fact, I think that we're just almost at the tip of the iceberg right now in the public really understanding what PBMs do to drive up the cost of healthcare. And Congress is just starting to catch on. The media is starting to catch on. But these are things that have been developing for the last 10 years.
So you talked early on about the role of PBM when they got started and them filling a role that was necessary. What are they doing now? What's different now than maybe when they got started?
It is completely different today than when they were started in the 70s. In the 70s, again, they were gathering networks of pharmacies. They were helping the insurance company monitor the drug adjudication process, because there's a medical benefit that you have if you look at the back of your insurance card. And there's also a pharmacy benefit. Those two worlds are very different, and they're just like different rules. So what has changed over the last 15 years? There's been a massive consolidation. So the big PBMs have swallowed up other big PBMs, like Express Scripts swallowed up Medco. You know, United Health Group is one of the biggest companies in the country. They've swallowed up Catamaran and various other PBMs to make this giant PBM called Optum. Caremark is owned by CVS Health, and they have just grown immeasurably. So between Caremark, the PBMs, Caremark, Express Scripts, and Optum, they're between 75 and 80% of every drug claim in the country. So they have massive negotiating power with the 60,000 pharmacies in the country. So some of the things that have changed, it's not just the horizontal merger of these giant PBMs coming together to form the big three, but it's not just that, but there's also a vertical consolidation. So now you think about CVS Health, it's the largest chain pharmacy. It's the largest specialty pharmacy. It's one of the largest PBMs, but in addition, it is also one of the largest insurance companies now. They own Aetna. And so if you think about a vertically consolidated entity, like think about Aetna, right? Aetna has all these insured lives, and they also do insurance for the self-insured community. So they do administrative services only product to gather a network of doctors and pharmacies for self-insured companies. And who do you think that they're going to use to do their PBM, to do their pharmacy benefits? There's only one company, and it's Caremark. This is like a no-bid contract situation. So if you're Aetna, you're not going to go out to get a competing bid because you want all the profits to stay within the one publicly traded company, CVS Health. And the same thing can be said for United Health Group, a publicly traded company. Their duty to shareholders is not, hey, let's go solve the healthcare crisis. Let's not try to reduce the net cost of drugs and improve healthcare. It's just to make money. Another part of vertical consolidation, United Health Group is the largest employer of doctors in this country. So they own doctors, they own pharmacies, they own the PBM, they own the insurance company, and rebate aggregators. So they really can control things dramatically. And hopefully we could also talk about the role of rebates also, which is very, very important.
Yeah, I wanted to get into that next. The rebate aggregators you mentioned and the role of rebates. Because, you know, it's one of the things that sometimes customers, patients actually hear about is, you know, rebates. What are we talking about here when we're talking about rebates and rebate aggregators?
So to talk about rebates, I first just want to talk about the concept of, you have a PBM, which you mentioned is middleman, and they also have a list of drugs, which they call a formulary, right? So you have these three major PBMs. And if you're, Chris, a drug manufacturer, you know you want your drug to be on that list. How do you get on that list? PBM calls you and says, hey, Chris, last year you paid $1 a pill to have the privilege of being on my formulary. I want you to pay $2 a pill now. And you might say, let's talk about patient care. Let's talk about efficacy and toxicity. My drugs are better than the other guy that you want on your formulary. I say, Chris, how much are you going to pay me to get on my formulary? That's what a rebate is. It's a kickback. And this kickback is illegal except for the fact that there is a safe harbor. But so a rebate is a payment to get on formulary. What happens, Chris, if you're the drug manufacturer and I don't, and you don't pay me what I want you to pay me? I might say, you know, Chris, your drug, you're going to be a tier 3 copay. It means a customer that wants your drug, they have to pay 20% instead of $3. And so, you know, Chris, I really, if your manufacturer doesn't pay me what I want, I'm going to make your drug hard to get. I'm going to create a prior authorization. Every time somebody wants your drug, the doctor's going to have to sit on the phone with my specialty pharmacy that I also own for an hour. So rebates really are a way for the PBM to get money from manufacturers. What do manufacturers do? What do they have to do? If you're paying me an extra dollar a pill, you're going to have to raise the list price of your drug by at least a dollar just to stay even. Congress is mad. The media is mad. Patients are mad. Everybody's mad. And many plans, whether it's a Medicare, Medicaid, or a private self-insured plan, many of these plans think that who cares about the rebate because it's all being passed through to me by the PBM. No, it is not. It is absolutely not. So PBMs control what they call a rebate versus what they call an administrative fee, a bona fide service fee, or anything else. So if you're the manufacturer and you pay me a dollar per pill, which could be a couple hundred billion dollars a year, I determine out of that couple hundred billion dollars, what do I say is rebate? I might say, you know, 100 billion out of that 200 billion is rebate. The other stuff is a not rebate. It's not a rebate. So I will pass $100 billion through to my plans and I keep 100 billion for myself. And unfortunately, patients pay the price because remember, patients are paying a copay based on that list price, which is the price before all these rebates and concessions that manufacturers give to PBMs.
And this is interesting too. You mentioned prior authorizations, different tiers on the formulary. And this is where our audience, our physician audience, this is where they feel the pain here because they have a patient who's on an insulin product, and my insulin went up 300%, or doctor's office has a hassle of trying to get a drug or a procedure approved. You know, we all know that prescription drugs have been on the rise. How much is this PBM, this rebate process, part of that rise?
I think that the rising list price of drugs and the net price, which is the price after all these rebates and concessions, that bubble, that difference between the gross and net price has grown tremendously over the last couple of years. And it is $175 billion now. Rebates are a big part. We had some litigation recently where we were able to uncover the exact dollar amount that the PBM and the PBM's rebate aggregator, which is a subsidiary company, kept before they gave the balance to a Medicare plan. So this is federal dollars. This is our Medicare trust fund money we're talking about. And it was 60%. But the rebates is a big part of it. There's other parts of the story about list prices. First of all, you know, PBMs, they also have specialty pharmacies. So you have the PBM that's controlling the price, but they also own a specialty pharmacy and a giant retail chain that profits from drug prices. So every time the list price goes up, the PBM makes more money. The PBM affiliated companies, specialty pharmacies and chains, all make more and more money. That's just part of the problem. There's also things called spread pricing. Spread pricing is when the PBM charges the plan sponsor one price for the drug, and then they turn around and charge and they reimburse a pharmacy sometimes below cost, sometimes below the pharmacy's acquisition cost. The difference between the amount that the PBM charges the plan and the amount the PBM reimburses to the pharmacy is called the spread. That spread is widening. So the list price of a drug, a substantial part of it is the PBM earning money on spread pricing. And there's other parts of it too that are somewhat incredulous. There's maximum allowable cost, which is a MAC pricing. And literally a PBM tells a plan sponsor, here's the MAC list I have for you. They have a different set of books, a different MAC list for the pharmacy. And there's the difference between those, the MAC price for the plan and the MAC price for the reimburse the pharmacy. That's a MAC spread that the PBM earns on generic drugs. And plans sign contracts that acknowledge, like, I acknowledge that there's going to be two sets of books for MAC pricing. So these plans really need to wake up. And by the way, what you mentioned earlier about physicians and prioritization, this is a real, real issue. I'm on the phone with specialty, like a rheumatologist group yesterday, one of the larger rheumatology groups in one state. And they are on the phone sometimes for 2 hours for one drug. And they're not making money. There's no one's reimbursing them for that prior authorization. It's just the PBM trying to stick with the drug that's on formulary to earn a greater reimbursement.
I mean, this is fascinating for one. I mean, these are one of these things that, you know, to hear the details of this and how it's developed, it's really fascinating. And I think our audience is going to be very interested in this topic. Can you talk a little bit about what's out there in terms of the potential efforts to sort of rein this in?
So first of all, providers should know, whether it's a physician provider or a pharmacy provider, they should know that there are some existing laws that help a lot. And so they should be aware of existing state laws. And also, to the extent that there's a self-funded plan patient, that patient has the right, first of all, to use their doctor. You know, there's this whole thing right now going on with specialty doctors, whether it's a rheumatologist or an oncologist, and they have the ability to dispense a drug, not just to write a prescription, but to actually dispense. And also to do infusions, which is not dispensing, it's administering a drug to a patient. PBMs, through the insurance companies they own, this vertical integration, they're starting to tell these rheumatologists and oncologists, we're going to do the infusion, or we're going to buy the drug, bill it to the insurance company, and we're going to send the drug in a white bag. It's called white bagging to you. We're going to make you white bag it, and you're not going to get paid anything for it. This is very bad for physicians. There's a recent United States Supreme Court decision in this case called Rutledge. And this Rutledge decision is massively important for state lawmakers to understand. There was a middle of the country state that that passed a law that said, hey, in our state, PBMs, you have to pay a reasonable rate to a pharmacy. And PCMA, which is the Pharmaceutical Care Management Association, which is the PBM lobby group, the day this law was enacted, they went and filed a suit. And the PBM lobby argued states don't have the authority to control what PBMs do. And the Supreme Court said, no, you PBMs, you're not above the law. You are subject to regulations by states. There's about 35 states that have laws that protect pharmacies called any willing provider laws. And so these laws now are more secure than they were. States should understand that they have the protection of the United States Supreme Court if they want to protect doctors, for example. So let's say you're a doctor and you prescribe the drug and you're sitting on the phone for 2 hours for a prior authorization. The pharmacy's the PBM is trying to switch the drug to a drug that's on their formulary so they can make a rebate. There can be rules against that. The brown bagging and white bagging, where a PBM says, you can't buy and bill, or the insurance company says, physician, you can't buy and bill. You have to send the prescription to us or send the order to us, and we will fill it and we'll send you the drug in a white bag, which is not good for patients for a number of reasons. There's delivery issues. There's cold chain storage where the drug has to be maintained a special way during storage. And just interrupts the doctor-patient relationship. States clearly have the authority to enact laws to protect physicians from this kind of insurance company abusive behavior.
What can the medical community at large try to do to push back on some of this, you know, frankly, big money, you know, big, powerful interests in healthcare?
Yeah, it's a good question, Chris. And I think, first, the state medical societies and the national associations of state societies have a more important role today than ever before. Why? Because it starts with the first question you asked there, like, what's a PBM? How has it changed? It has changed so dramatically in the last 10 years. The role of state and national associations of specialty physicians has increased. The role of them and the importance of them has increased dramatically. They have to be educating the doctors. Well, in your state, what is the law that protects you? So some of it is understanding the rule of law that exists in the state already and exists on the national framework. I represent some national associations that have impacted national PBM changes. We write letters to PBMs on behalf of national associations. We had a national, we had a PBM that was going to kick every physician out of its dispensing network. They said, you're not really a pharmacy. You just dispense drugs. Therefore, you're not protected by the any willing provider law under Medicare. And they tried to kick them out. We threatened a lawsuit. We wrote a white paper. The PBM reversed course. So these national associations need to be proactive and go to these PBMs, go to the insurance companies and say, we have a problem with prior authorization. We have a problem with you trying to switch drugs that we write to get it on formulary. We have a problem with white bagging and brown bagging. We have a problem with you not reimbursing us correctly. So they and you're right. They can absolutely go to their congressman. Congressman, I'm telling you, 3 years ago, if you talked about a PBM, they would say, what's a PBM? They all know what it is now, and they're all starting to get to catch on to this. Doctors can also educate their patients a little bit. Patients have rights. 50% of patients are in self-funded plans. That means that they have the right to go to their plan, their employer, and say, I have rights to select my own doctor, to have this drug. I have the right to select my own pharmacy. I have the right not to have to pay a copay that's based on this list price of a drug, which is ridiculous. So I do agree there's a governmental affairs angle. There's an increasing role of national associations as well. There's also the state boards of pharmacy, boards of medical examiners, and board of every state has its own word for it, but they're like Department of Banking and Insurance. Physician groups are just trying to keep people safe right now, but their state associations and national associations should be informing those state boards. This is what the insurance company is doing in your state. You have to be aware of it and effectuate change. So those are some of the things that I think physicians can do.
My last question is just, is there anything that we haven't discussed about PBMs that you think is important for physicians to know right now?
Yes, I think that physicians should stand their ground. If you believe that this drug is in the best interest of your patient, fight for the prioritization or enlist the service of a pharmacy to help out. But I think one of the most important things is in many states, a physician under their plenary license has the authority to dispense a drug to a patient. And so physicians should start to learn a little bit about that because it could be a way to get better patient care. And so they should do a little research, maybe communicate with the state association if the state association knows about physician dispensing. But in-office dispensing or dispensing physician practice is another source of revenue potentially, but also another source of direct patient care.
Jonathan Levitt, thanks so much for your insight today. I really appreciate it.
Chris, thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for listening. You can subscribe to our podcasts on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher. And be sure to visit our website at medicaleconomics.com, where you'll find all the latest news about the business of healthcare. We hope you'll listen next month for a new episode of Off the Chart with Medical Economics.